Hello there, my friend. If you're into fuzzy animals or tree-to-tree adventures, stay with me. Russell Dawes is here to talk about Tallahassee Museum. And for those artistic folks among us and art lovers, yeah, well, the folks at Lemoyne have something really cool coming up. That's called Art and Soul Celebration this week. So you better stay with me. I've got a lot coming at you.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Brought to you by Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first name in glass for your home or office. And by Merry Maids. Call Merry Maids. Relax. And it's done.
When you place a document in someone's hand, it should reach more than their head. It needs to reach their heart with compelling visuals and dramatic presentations right down to the paper it's printed on. Rapid Press reaches the hearts of thousands of people every day with commercial printing and mailing services, for organizations that feed and house children, for businesses that bring vital products and services to our community, and for theaters, festivals, and orchestras reaching bigger audiences and bringing joy to life. Rapid Press, commercial printers since 1983.
For digital printing, offset printing, finishing, and mailing services, reach for Rapid Press. When you're ready to share your vision, excite your customers, and reach the hearts of your audience, reach for Rapid Press. You'll find them online at rapidpress.com or call 893-7346. 893-7346. Rapid Press, the power of print.
Again, my friend, we have another opportunity to talk about the very cool things going on around town and the very cool people that are making it happen. Hope you are plugged in to some of the latest happenings, things that will entertain and inform. Tallahassee Museum certainly is. We got Russell Dawes. He's the grand potentate, the head cheese, the man. I think he's the president and CEO, chief executive officer, C-class. Anyway, so he's running that whole thing out there. And what a zoo. Ha! So Russell's going to talk with us about that, about otters and endangered red wolves that they have reached out to. And they have a whole neat thing going on with that, help preserve the red wolf. Your own Tallahassee Museum is doing this, see? Isn't that a cool thing? And if you haven't been out there lately, wow, they've got some great exhibits going on, some neat stuff coming up. And so Russell will be here with me in the second hour of this here fine radio show to tell you about that. In the meantime, you've got Lemoyne and Kozalewski. She's going to be with me here shortly, and her devoted associate, who is the development director, Catherine Leonard. They're going to talk about Art and Soul Celebration coming up this Thursday. It's a fundraiser, but it's a fun fundraiser. They call it Midnight in Paris, October 19th, at Goodwood, from 6 to 8:30. And basically, you buy a ticket. You lay down $110 if you're not a member. If you are a member, it's $75. You do a silent auction. They do live auction. There's dinner, open bar, entertainment. So it's going to be cool. We're going to learn all about that. But most importantly, we're going to learn about the mission that is Lemoyne Center for the Visual Arts, and what a mission that has been and remains to our good. And we'll talk about her, talk about their contribution to us, and talk with Anne about her involvement personally and how over the years that has been a very, very good thing, very healthy thing for Tallahassee. Because, you know what, they are like rated the number one art festival in the country now, among one of the publications that looks at such things. You say, well, what difference does that make to me? Well, it does, because it means that Tallahassee takes another step forward in the right direction, being known for something that is a good thing, as opposed to some things that show up on the front page of the newspaper. I mean, like FBI investigations and Leon County school resegregation. I mean, all of this has come at us just in the last week again. And it's, I mean, I don't know. We're all subject to the things that are part of us. You know what I mean? In other words, you know how the scriptures put it, when one part of the body hurts, the whole body hurts. Now, that's kind of the notion here, that we are connected and we are systemic in that way. That you may not think so. Maybe you just disavow any of that thinking. I happen to think it's true. Simply because it's not noticeable at the moment, or because you don't personally experience the impact of that directly in your own life, that doesn't mean anything to me. It just means that you're distanced enough from the immediate impact of a negative or a positive to be able to report that to anybody, right? So it's sort of like this. You're driving down the road, and you see the blue lights up ahead, and you see the red lights on the, you know, the emergency vehicles, and you begin to brake a bit, and it's got your attention. But, you know, you can easily turn at the next intersection and avoid the whole thing, sure. Or maybe you don't have that option, and so as you approach, it's still not personal, right? It's just another wreck on the side of the road. And maybe you're annoyed because now it's slowing you down. There's a compassionate response for you. but then you get a little closer and you notice one of the vehicles involved looks very familiar. And so now it becomes a bit more impactful for you. And that vehicle turns out to be your daughter's car. And she's in the car. It all of a sudden became very important to you. Okay, so my point here is simply this. Whether or not we think it has direct impact on us may be simply a matter of time and distance. It may simply be a matter of the occasion when you're busy doing something else. And in fact, it'll come around. And maybe you begin to wonder, well, how come Leon County schools, according to this report, are the state's most divided school districts? So James Call wrote this article. This was last Sunday, a week ago now. And the opening line, Tallahassee, scene of some of Florida's important civil rights battles, has retreated from the ideals of the 60s and 70s. Public schools in Florida capital city are resegregated, according to a Leroy Collins Institute report. And there's a bitter twist, he says. The findings by lead author Gary Orfield of the UCLA Civil Rights Center show that green is the new black. Race and money determine where and with whom kids sit in class. Well, okay. Maybe, again, that doesn't directly impact you. But then again, maybe over time and with enough opportunity, your business is impacted, or maybe your kids are deprived of an opportunity to enjoy meeting other people that are not like them. And how good is that for them? Maybe because Lemoyne has decided to be contributive, as has Tallahassee Museum, be contributive to the betterment of us all and the celebration of what we are as a community, maybe that has a way of attracting people to the community, getting us to be more aware of how things like public school segregation impact our ability to do business, our ability to celebrate such things as art and endangered species and our own history. Maybe we're brought a little closer into those conversations because we decide that we have something worth belonging to here. We have something worth celebrating here. We have something worth working for here. So maybe we're not quite as dull. Maybe we don't just take the next right turn off of the conversation and keep going. Maybe we get a little bit more involved in why things happen the way they do. So if the car wreck happened and it did turn out to be your daughter, I assure you, my friend, you and I both know this, you're going to want to know what happened and why it happened and how it could be avoided, how it could be stopped. Well, sure, now you're plugged in because it affects you personally. My comment to you is everything that happens in this town affects you and I personally. Somehow, some way, sometime. Stay with me.
I love my Volvo. That's why I love Volcar. They take care of my Volvo the way I do. But my husband doesn't drive a Volvo. Good news, Volcar cares for all cars, and they give the same extra attention to detail and the same qualified precision every car requires. New or not so new, Carol and her team at Volcar are some of my most favorite people. She makes it a lot easier to understand what's going on with my car. And I trust her. And I think my husband does too, especially when he saw they charge less than his mechanic for the same service. So we're just one big happy family. Me, my Volvo, and my husband. With a little help from our friends at Volcar.
Volcar Sales and Service on Capital Circle Northeast, just north of Miccosukee in Tallahassee. Volcar for all cars. On the web at volcartally.com or call 942-4980. 942-4980.
Changing the face of talk radio in Tallahassee. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Time now for Tallahassee Business Spotlight, brought to you by Tiffany Hamilton. The 9th annual Pat Ramsey benefit for Big Bend Hospice is tonight. And I have Nikki Jones with me to tell me a little bit more about it. How are you, Nikki?
Good, how are you?
Glad you're here to help us, help me especially figure this all out, because, man, you got oodles of stuff coming at us. It's all out at the Bradfordville Blues Club, and I think gates open at noon.
Yes,
right.
Gates will open at noon.
Mm-hmm. And is how are you handling the, I guess, the ticket sales? You pay at the door kind of thing?
Yes, we will have somebody set up at the right when you come into the parking lot there,
yeah.
And you'll just do your $20 donation
and
go and park your car.
And it is a donation, isn't it?
For the most part,
because
everything will go straight to Big Bend Hospice.
Yeah. Pat Ramsey, a beloved blues harmonica player, blues musician for many, many, many years. This tribute to him and this benefit for Big Bend Hospice has really grabbed hold of a lot of hearts, hasn't it? People really flock to this.
Oh, very much so.
Mm. And you've got such a lineup. I'm reading from some of the program notes here. So let's see. We've got Brown Goose Band. Swinging Harpoon. Lauren Mitchell. Of course, Jerry Thigpen, our buddy. The Jerry Thigpen Trio. This just some of the best that you can find. Lisa Berry. Are you kidding me? Lori Klein. Debbie Jordan. So some of this is outdoors. Some of it is indoors. I like this fire stage, an acoustic set, and that kicks off 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yes, and it'll be going all night. You can even camp out there if you'd like.
I noticed that. So it's $20 as a donation at the door, and then the campsites are $5.
Yes.
So you could come out there with whatever, and can you accommodate even like a camper or something of that kind? Or is
there
it
are some people that do bring their campers out.
Okay,
there.
Okay.
I'm not sure if there's hookups or not, but there's plenty of space.
Plenty of space. Again, it's at the Bradfordville Blues Club, and it starts today. Starts at noon today, all the way through into the evening, and you don't really know how late it'll go, right?
No, because sometimes when they're done inside, they'll all sit around the fireside stage and you'll get some surprise guests out there, too.
This all happened because, I guess, your mom had this vision some years ago and others wanting to do this as a tribute to him.
Well, before he passed away, he was there for our very, very first benefit.
Oh, I see.
So this is a way, the bills were so substantial, and they weren't going to make my mother pay for Pat once he had passed away, and she just didn't want to do that.
I see.
Instead of having a debt there, she...
tried to figure out a way to solve the problem.
And this way it helps hospice, and it also keeps Pat's memory alive.
It's going forward. You've got a silent auction and a raffle. That's kind of cool.
Oh, yes. And we've got an amazing silent auction item. This particular item that I'm talking about is we're going to do an internet auction for it as well.
Oh, cool.
So it won't just be there at the benefit, but it will be there for you to look at. It is two signed harmonicas, one of Pat's with his signature on it, and one of Jason Ritchie.
Oh, my goodness.
And it also has a picture of them, and it's in a shadow box. Very, very beautiful.
Wow. This is very, very cool. It just takes your breath away when you start looking at some of the lineup that you've had. And I mentioned a few of these artists. Mary Everett Band, Major Bacon with Choo Choo Charlie McGinn. Man, Frank Jones Band. With special guests is what this is saying.
Yes.
Listen live. You can listen on Hank 106.1. So that's kind of cool. Good old Hank Kestenbaum is out there doing his part to bring us live broadcasting from the festival. And that goes, I guess that starts up at around 9 o'clock?
Yes.
On Saturday evening. So tonight at 9, you can tune into 106.1. When you think about how the Bradfordville Blues Club itself has contributed to the music community for Tallahassee, and in like manner has contributed to our welfare as a community. What comes to your mind? What do you think of?
They are amazing out there. It's a beautiful venue. It's out in the middle of nowhere, so you're kind of tucked in the corner, and you get to go out and have a good time. Great memories out there.
Gary Anton and his wife have really been the
they're wonderful.
The folks that have mastered this for all these years.
Yes.
Through thick and thin.
Mm-hmm.
Seems to me there have been a number of times when Gary's thinking, maybe this is the last, and then all of a sudden the lights will come back on.
Oh, yes.
And they just keep going.
Yes, they're wonderful people.
Not unlike the way in which blues itself, I think, remains a sort of a curiosity for a lot of people. If you're not into blues music, it might be worthwhile for you to take a look at how the whole phenomenon has come about. It's truly an American art form, isn't it?
Oh, yes. It's a wonderful genre of music.
Mm. Mm. What do you hope will come as a result of this? I know that you want to raise a lot of money for Big Ben Hospice.
Big Ben Hospice, it'll help go towards their music programs and grief counseling, and just help run their everyday facility. And it also helps keep Pat's memory alive, which is one thing that we love. And these amazing artists help us do that every year.
That's very cool. Folks, it's called the 9th Annual Pat Ramsey Benefit for Big Ben Hospice. With Nikki Jones here, my guest, telling us all about it. You can find him online. If you want to go to Facebook, go to Pat Ramsey Legacy. That's an easy thing to do. Or you can go online to the BradfordvilleBlues.com. So their website is a great spot, too, to learn more about this festival as you're sitting here listening to me talk at you. It starts up at noon, goes all the way through into the evening, on to the wee hours if the voices don't give out, and they're not all just completely exhausted by the end of the night, I think you'll find yourself in the company of some remarkable music. They'll have plenty of food. They've got food on site. They got food trucks. You can do some camping through the evening. It's going to be a great time. The Bradfordville Blues Club hosting the 9th Annual Pat Ramsey Benefit for Big Ben Hospice. Our guest, Nikki Jones. Nikki, thanks for being with me.
Thank you.
Appreciate the update. Folks, that's what we've got for you here at the moment. You stay with me. I'm Brian Cerny, and this is another Tallahassee Business Spotlight. Spooky sounds will echo from the entertainment stage, while wicked fun abounds for the faint of heart and thrill seekers alike at Tallahassee Museum's 24th annual Halloween Howl. It's set for October 27th and 28th from 6 to 10 p.m. nightly. So here's your opportunity. Prepare for a night filled with fun, family-friendly activities, trick-or-treating, both haunted and not-so-spooky trails, carnival games, costumes, costume contests, prizes, and more. It's all courtesy of your friends at Tallahassee Museum. It's what we love about what Tallahassee Museum brings to us every day throughout the year, and especially at Halloween. They'll have Ace of Hearts on Friday night and Blue Phoenix Band on Saturday night, plus Sarah McWaters performing kid-friendly music for singing along. Be a part of the fun at Tallahassee Museum, October 27th and 28th. Find out more at TallahasseeMuseum.org.
More beauty, less bully. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
So if you have been a friend of the show for some time, you know that Lemoyne is a word, a name that is often spoken with great reverence here, because we think that Lemoyne has contributed sizably to our welfare at so many different levels. And we're going to talk with Ann Kozaliski, who is with us today. She is the executive director.
Art director.
Okay, what's
that? Yes.
Getting my titles right here. Yes, and Catherine Leonard, who is the development director. How are you, Catherine?
Good.
Nice to have you with us. This is your first time on the show.
It is my first time.
How does
time
it feel so far?
So far, so good.
All right. Good, good. You're not uncomfortable?
No.
Not, would you like a donut or coffee?
No, I'm good.
No. We already had coffee and donuts, and you didn't. Well, so we have lots to talk about, do we not?
Yes, sir. Lots going on at Lemoyne.
Let's talk first things first, because you've got something coming up in the foreground here. Tell me about that.
Well, Catherine has more details to it than
well,
I do. But that's
let's
art
go to Catherine.
Soul.
Let's yes. go to Catherine. Tell us, Catherine.
We have Art and Soul Celebration coming up on Thursday, October 19th from 6 to 9 p.m.
That's coming up this week, then.
It is. It's at Goodwood. We're going to have food by Blue Halo, open bar, silent and live auction with various George Milton.
And music with Annabelle Lee.
Annabelle Lynn, yes.
Annabelle Lynn, okay. Maybe I need more coffee. Is that the problem?
You know.
Whatever.
I mean, Edgar Allan Poe is always good too.
Edgar Allan Poe, yeah. Yes. Okay. So, in fact, this is a fundraiser.
Yes.
Which makes sense.
You're our fall fundraiser.
Person of interest on that mm-hmm. note. You have for us then music and food and what else did
the
you say?
So, silent and live auction.
Yeah.
We have artwork along with special items. We've got baskets of product that have been gathered together for your temptation.
Okay, so I just come in there and satiate myself with all of these goodies and buy lots of stuff.
Buy big.
Buy big and help Lemoyne and then feel great. Because
absolutely.
I have in my possession now some marvelous artworks, mm-hmm. courtesy of Lemoyne, Center
Lemoyne
for the Visual
and
Arts.
And the local art of Ron Arabedra, Terry Corbett, Quincy Hamby.
Dan Taylor.
We have Barbara Simmons. And
I love Barbara Simmons.
Yes.
You know what I love about Barbara Simmons?
She's donated three pieces.
Are you a friend of hers on Facebook?
Yes. Yes, all the deer.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, my God, it's like a zoo back there.
I mean, my goodness.
Yes, yes.
And so now I have rival deer because I have deer in my yard.
Oh, my goodness.
So, but now she also knows that I am fond of mooses.
Oh.
So every time she finds a moose on the internet, she's posting this on my Facebook page.
Oh, okay. Well, that's
thank
nice.
You, Barbara.
Equal time.
I love you, Barbara. Anyway,
equal time.
I digress. So Barbara Simmons, all these artists that are contributing their talents and
yes.
their work.
And Debbie and Randy Breenan, and they're
some of our local
huge
faves.
Supporters
big
of
time.
Lemoyne.
Big time.
And the artwork that is used on the materials is the theme for the event is
Midnight in Paris.
And Debbie has painted a beautiful image of the Eiffel Tower at night.
Tell me about this. Now, was this your thought Midnight in Paris? How did that come about?
We were having a committee meeting, and I think someone mentioned Paris, and somehow we came up with the idea of Midnight in Paris.
As opposed to noon.
Yeah.
We thought midnight sounded a little bit more...
Yeah, a little more romantic than, you know, brunch on the Louvre.
Didn't I meet you in Paris at midnight? Yes, right. So this all happens this coming Thursday, the 19th. It's at Goodwood. Starts at what time?
6.
6 o'clock. Do I need to do anything in advance? Do I just show up?
Tickets are $75 for members and $110 for non-members, but that includes an individual membership to Des Moines.
Nice. $75, $100, member, non-member. Do that in advance? Go to your website or just...
You can do it on the website, lemoyne.org/art and soul.
Yeah.
Or you can visit our Facebook page. We have an event link on there as
well.
So
you're on it.
Mm-hmm.
Marvelous. So that's all you have, huh? Just that or other stuff going on?
Yeah, it's kind of slow.
No, I know better. So that's all this coming week. Then comes what? The holiday?
Oh, well, currently yes. Exhibit that we have going on is the Florida Society of Goldsmiths.
Mm-hmm.
And they're running the entire month of October, and we are providing gallery talks every Saturday in the month of October with demonstrations from the exhibiting artists. Yes. And this Saturday, we're having a trunk show and sale of semi-precious stones. The sale of these items will go to support the education.
Wow.
And then, of course.
Yes.
The holiday show.
Dun, 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 dun,
comes
dun,
up.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yes.
That's my holiday theme music.
We close for the whole month of November and open Thanksgiving night with the 54th annual holiday show and sale.
Wow.
The Art of Giving, with the little subtitle of Come Home to Des Moines.
Nice.
Yes,
nice.
We invite 100 artists to come and bring their work, and we have items under $30 all the way up to masterworks by these artists.
That was your idea, was it not?
Yes.
That you said, you know, we need to make this a little bit more user-friendly for those of us who could drop $30, maybe $40, but not $300 or $400.
Right. Well, you need to get art into the hands of the people. And you do it in a comfortable environment where some people become intimidated by art because they think they have to know something about it. And all you have to know is that you like it. And we'll get art into the hands of the people under $30 at a crack. Hmm. And then they'll come back and say, oh, I bought from this artist last year, and oh, I really like this piece, and it's in the higher level, but I can afford it now. My life has changed, and so
I divorced my wife
or husband, and
I don't know why I'm so cynical today. What's
I
wrong
don't either.
With me?
Have another donut.
I
man.
Mean,
you
I'm
know,
just
really.
Not in myself. Maybe I am myself. That's the problem.
So, yes, so we're very excited about that. 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday.
The holidays
10 to 8
are coming
and Sunday,
quickly,
wonderful.
Are they not? Yeah.
And we've had all kinds of great stuff going on. We're going to have Santa on December 17th.
Nice.
We'll have, we're looking forward to having the Ladies Barbershop Quartet singing for us. And lots of opportunity for other local talent to sing and play on the front porch. And also want to invite nonprofits to contact us. We like to share the wealth of our attendance and provide a space on the front porch for nonprofits to have a table and spread their information.
That's very cool.
And
the spirit of collaboration.
Already.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We've got... Bags for Hope ladies and Rags to Bags ladies with Sustainable Tallahassee.
How cool is this?
They're making gift bags. So you come, you buy artwork at Des Moines, we give you a free bag made by Bags
bada
for
bing, bada
I'm
boom.
I'm telling you, it works all the way around. It's all good.
That's how I know you. You are the all-around person.
Oh, bless you.
I have to say, back in the day when Des Moines was not doing quite as well, some bright person said, let's hire Ann Kozeliski. And you said, huh?
What? Oh, I said, thank you.
Oh, you
I
did.
Said,
okay.
Thank you. Yes,
it was later you went, what was I thinking?
Yeah.
I get it. But look what's happened.
Oh, yeah.
You have done so well. And this,
we. It's, this, it's
no, it's
team.
All you, Ann. No. It's all about Ann.
No,
this
Brian.
Is the Ann Kozeliski hour right here.
Oh, no. It's only
and
10
and
minutes.
Her friend Catherine,
like,
who is helping us out. So let me remind you folks, if you're not paying attention, which doesn't surprise me at this point, it is this coming Thursday. They have this wonderful opportunity for you to participate in all that they do and help out. Tickets are $75 for members, $100 for non-members. It's at Goodwood. Starts at 6
o'clock. And ends at 8:30.
Ends at 8:30.
And the non-member tickets are $110.
Oh, $110. Beg your
but
pardon.
You get a membership, which
okay.
is a $40
But if you've been on
value.
The radio with a certain radio host, maybe, I don't know.
It'll
folks,
be $200.
We're having too much fun. Thank you. You stay with me. I've got more with these young ladies right here. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
My dog was in bad shape, and I was scared. I had never seen her so sick, and my mind was racing. What to do? Who to call? I mean, I raised her from a puppy. She's like my best friend. A few years ago, she developed diabetes, and I've been following her daily regimen carefully. But that morning, something just wasn't right. She could barely move, and I thought, I'm losing my dog. I called a friend, and he said, call Dr. Pliskin. So I called Mahan Animal Clinic. They put me through immediately, and Dr. Pliskin said to get her there right away. Turns out, her blood sugar had dropped dramatically, but he knew exactly what to do. I guess you know. There's no other place I would go knowing that Mahan Animal Clinic and Dr. Pliskin are there for me and Aerith.
Special people and special care for those you love. Mahan Animal Clinic on Mahan Drive near Costco. On the web at mahananimalclinic.com or call 402-0557.
Now we're really talking. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're sitting here talking with Ann Kozeliski and her lovely companion, who is the development director, Catherine Leonard, for LeMoyne Center for the Visual Arts, which has contributed, I said this at the very beginning of our conversation, has contributed so well at so many different levels. And for me, it is this business of, and you said it, Ann, putting art in the hands of people and being proactive, trying to figure out a way to do that. Making yourselves more accessible, not only in terms of those of us who would like to purchase art from local artists particularly, but then making the art experience like this Goldsmith show that you're doing where you can go in and watch this happening.
Mm-hmm.
So it has that educative contribution itself.
Absolutely.
So you're contributing to our understanding, and then you contribute to our national position, we'll say, in that the Chain of Parks Art Festival that happens every spring, I guess in April.
Third weekend of April.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You guys were ranked like number one in the universe?
Yes.
Something like
yes.
that.
Yes, number one in the universe. We'll
absolutely.
Take that.
Okay.
Yes, and that is by Sunshine Artist Magazine. And it is a ranking by sales.
Huh.
So it is a selection based on the surveys given to the artists.
Huh.
You know, this isn't because we bought more advertising in the magazine than, you know, Peachtree
Not
Festival.
Contrived.
No.
Not
yeah,
influenced.
This is not at all. It is strictly from the artist sales.
Interesting.
So, and a lot of hard work by our committee and headed by Kelly Dozier. So it is, we're thrilled. We're absolutely thrilled and not resting on laurels by any chance.
In fact, those of us, and there are a lot of you listening who have done this kind of work, when you're putting a festival together, it's like baking a cake on an open ocean. I mean, you're just moving every way you can to try to keep those candles lit and make it all come together.
Mm-hmm.
It starts the day after you finish one festival
it
and
does.
You're on to the next.
It does.
And what's remarkable there again, Anne, I mean, and quite sincerely, I remember when Lemoyne was getting ready to close its doors some years ago.
Mm-hmm.
How do you account for this? Because you guys have turned this thing around in spades, and now you're ranked number one in the country with this art show, and not resting on your laurels. You're doing stuff just about every month all through the year.
Oh, absolutely. It's hard work fueled by passion.
Yeah.
And on all levels. As I mentioned, with Kelly and her committee for Chain of Parks, this isn't something that you pick up in March
right.
and say, hey,
right.
we're going to have a festival.
Yeah, yeah.
They go to other festivals and they see what is working in other areas oh. and they bring it back. Mm. And they grow, and they're constantly adding something new, changing the variety, not only to the festival, but to the exhibits that we have. Mm-hmm. We're striving to have national exhibits. This summer we had the Sumier Society of America's National Juried Show here, which is, to those who don't know what Sumier is, That's
medium.
My thing. Yeah,
yeah,
I love it. And it's Chinese bamboo brush painting.
Neat.
And so we had work from all over the country here. And that was in July. This summer, our exhibits have seen a larger attendance at opening night than we have for years. It's just fabulous. And it's been growing and growing and growing. And I think it's because... you know, we're changing things up. We're getting wider, more varied sponsors for the openings.
Right.
Catherine's getting out there and bringing in the local food assortments, the restaurants, the food trucks. You know,
we'll
get those people in there so
right.
that... We truly are creating community through art, and that's...
It's those connections that I think are telltale. And when you talked with me here a while ago about this grant from Duke Energy...
Duke Energy, yeah.
Okay, wait a minute. This I'm trying to compute this in my head. You have this corporate entity over here that's granting... this artsy fartsy group of hippies that make art things, that seems to me to be coming from two sides of the world, and that yet you guys meet in this with an allied purpose.
Mm-hmm.
That's somehow very refreshing to me. That
well, art fuels the world. It's in every aspect of our lives. From the shirts and clothes we wear to the cars we drive, someone somewhere put a pencil or a stylus or a crayon, and it all started with probably a stick in the dirt when we were little. But there is design in everything, everything.
Yeah.
And when you stimulate the right side of the brain, that supports the left side. It makes you a better thinker.
Yeah.
And getting out and putting what we're going to be doing with Duke Energy is a digital studio, and creating animation and providing these tools to teens, primarily. This is our focus group, teens, 13 to 17, 18.
Right.
The tools that can take them to their next level.
Mm.
I mean, it's all digital now, but if you don't know how to put the pieces and parts together, or at least have the confidence
right.
to think, oh, if I put this over here, what happens? Boom.
Something.
You know?
And it's contributive at a personal level, you're saying, because art as an enterprise, and it's something we can all participate in, regardless of what we think about our own talents, helps us grow intellectually. And when you see school districts eliminating art from the curriculum,
big mistake.
I mean, I don't want to be too hasty in my judgment here, but Jefferson County Schools has done that, and they're not doing very well. Is there a correlation there, or is that in your mind?
I don't know, and I can't put myself into that, other than I think so many people, when they think you take an art class, you have to become an artist. No. You enjoy it. It's a way to relax. You don't have to do anything more with it than enjoy the moment.
But educators ought to take a note that music and art itself, or as enterprise, have contribution at a level that may not be driving us toward a professional career in art or music.
Right. It supports it.
But it's helping us, isn't
it? Yeah. Your thought process.
Yeah. Well, we've had a lot to think about here today, and we want to thank you both for making it part of your day so that we are better motivated, informed. We got to go out this coming Thursday. We'll be at Goodwood. Catherine is going to be looking for you.
Yes.
Yeah. Art and Soul Celebration.
Taking
names.
Paris at Midnight is the name of the whole thing. Great opportunity to just have a blast. $110, you said, for non-members, $75 for members. Great food. Great entertainment, music, silent auction, not so silent auction, whatever. Just have a blast at Goodwood with these fine people. Lemoyne Center for the Visual Arts, contributing as they do. Anything else, Ann? Did we leave anybody off the list?
Oh, well, I left out just a couple names of artists. We have Nina Freeman. She has a beautiful abstract. Frank Dietrich has a beautiful digital piece that he created. And Mike Brennan has a locomotive engine painting that's 72 inches long, I think.
Holy smokes.
I mean, if you like trains, this
that would
is
be
a
for
painting
me.
For you.
Yeah.
You need
okay.
to come and buy this.
I will do that.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah, and Anthony Quiggle has
and
that
Anthony
sculpture.
Anthony Quiggle, beautiful sculpture. He was a student of Ralph Hirsch.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Wow.
Another local name.
It's all happening, folks. Ann Kozoliski, the art director for, and Catherine Leonard, who is the development director for, Lemoyne Center for the Visual Arts, right here in Tallahassee, the very famous Lemoyne.
Oh,
there we go.
At Alcom.
At Alcom. Folks, we're going to do more of this silliness if you'll stay with me in the second hour. I've got more coming up right after this break. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
The most talked about topics in town, Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back. You're here, I'm there. No, wait, I'm here, you're there. And we have this lovely opportunity in this second hour to talk with Russell Dawes, good friend of the show, good friend of many. Tallahassee Museum is his charge. We're going to talk with him about some of the things they have coming up. And thought it'd be interesting to talk with him, too. Along the lines of this, what has become a national conversation about observances and recognitions and venerated statues and our own personal, let's say our own, I should say not personal, but societal history, the controversy that has arisen over those places around the country, especially in the South, where Confederate statues have been there for many years, installed. Some have been moved, some removed entirely. Not particularly his concern, but along the lines of the fact that they bring to us this demonstration of Florida's history, North Florida, I should say, Tallahassee's history. Do you know that 1860 census reveals that 75% of the population of Leon County was enslaved? We had more plantations than any other county in Florida, I think somewhere around 70, 71. It's part of our history. And if you're a museum, Tallahassee Museum, I mean, that's the way it is. And for that reason, they have on display this house that was owned by Catherine Moreau, who was, a grandniece of George Washington. So she had ties, we'll say, connections, historic as such. Owned slaves, operated a plantation. What kind of person is that? And why would you want her being presented at your museum? Not to try to stir up the dust of controversy at all, not my intention, but really to further the conversation along the question of what is it that we find offensive? What is it that we find unacceptable? What conversation is not permitted? What words are not allowed? What ideas are not given the light of day? How much do we need to suppress, repress, restrict in the way of, let's say, cleansing the culture of anything we find objectionable? It's an honest academic question. It's one that has been asked long before you and I got here. You know, and certain national leaders, Mao Zedong comes to mind, decided that a cultural revolution needed to cleanse the culture from all of those prior references to the former China. In place of that, communist China took its position. Similarly, in Vietnam, if you've had a chance to watch the celebrated recent release of Ken Burns' documentary, Americans pulled out and North Vietnamese moved in, and pretty much the next thing they did was to destroy every evidence of prior culture. That's just part of the way it goes. Am I suggesting that's what's going on here? Well, I'm not so sure that there aren't certain people that wouldn't value that, or would call for that. I'm more on this side of saying, well, let's preserve the opportunity for the conversation, even when the conversation may include ideas that we find, I don't know, foul, offensive, inappropriate. Before we shut it down, let's give everybody a chance to review it. And that's kind of where I'm at with the whole museum thing. Take a look at the way life was for those living in the South, in Tallahassee, in Leon County, in the mid-1800s. What did that look like? Have we moved on beyond that economically, politically, socially, culturally? What is it that we celebrate now? Where is it that we invest ourselves? A question that bothers me a lot. How do we make decisions? How do we process what's important? And I mean as a community. Do we relegate that decision-making and that power to a few, those who are powerful, and the rest of us just sort of go along with that? Is that how that works? Reminds me of my old professor, Jurglich. Anita Jurglich was my mentor, Seattle University, class of 77, by the way. And she used to ask us about the locus of control. Now, in being a sociologist, she was very much interested in social structure and process, and social systems, and all that sort of thing. So the locus of control having to do with not just who decides, but beyond that, who decides who's going to decide? So what she was pointing at is this business of much broader, much more insidious forces that may not be particularly apparent, but have an agenda, have a direction, that are administered by those who are unseen and who then go about bringing together the more notable, visible, apparent people making decisions. But they're really only making the decisions that others have decided are to be made. And in referencing Ken Burns' Vietnam War documentary, you get a glorious example of how the backstage works in that, or worked in that situation for several presidencies, most notably with Johnson and with Nixon. You have the view, as unpalatable as it is, of how those ideas were brought together. You know, and then later on, discovering Robert McNamara's admonition. This is a big mistake, but that was never brought to light. It was really back behind his involvement. He didn't bring all of that to those in charge at the time, particularly President Johnson. So when we look around the room and we say, where are we today? What are we doing now? Well, I think when we look at something like Tallahassee Museum, to kind of bring this full circle, we see an opportunity to embrace our past, own it, decide what it is about that past that is valuable, to be valued, and what it is that we can learn from it and move forward and say, you know, those are not the things that I believe in anymore. So you've heard me say this. Tallahassee is a 14-year-old child, an adolescent, who's been told what to think, what to feel, where to go, who to belong to. And now it's time for us to grow up. Stay with me.
Widen Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Widen Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Widen's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Widen Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Widen Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Hey folks, welcome back to Truck and Car Concepts. It is tailgate season. It's time to secure your tailgate items. We can do that with the tonneau covers. We do alarm systems, both in the bed and the vehicle itself. And we also do camper shells or toppers. Not only that, let's dress your truck up. We got Nerf bars, we do window tinting, car stereos. Bringing out the tailgate pong. Everybody loves to play tailgate pong. Come on down to Truck and Car Concepts and get yourself ready for tailgating. 656-8800.
Good morning, friends. This is your friend, Dr. Benjamin Franklin. We're talking with Brian Cerny on Tallahassee Talks.
Russell Dawes is the president and CEO of the Tallahassee Museum and has served in that capacity for the last 26 years, which is striking because I remember when Russell arrived here among us, and it doesn't feel like 26 years ago, but okay. I have this on good authority. These are the facts as we know them. Mr. Dawes currently serves as a member of the board of the Florida Association of Museums and is one of their past presidents. He's also a member and past chairman of Leon County Tourist Development Council. Mr. Dawes serves on the executive committee of the Big Bend Scenic Byway Management Authority, whatever that is, we're going to find out. And he's a board member of the Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association Tallahassee chapter. In addition to all of these duties, Mr. Dawes is a grant reviewer for the Institute of Museum Services in Washington, D.C. And as a museum accreditation reviewer, he serves the American Alliance of Museums. He has served as a grant panelist for numerous national, state, and local museum grant programs, and he is our guest this morning. How are you, Mr. Dawes?
I'm great, Brian. Wonderful to be here.
Wow. My mouth got dry. They're trying to... And there's more. So suffice to say, you're an accomplished individual and one who has pursued the kinds of things that you're doing for us and for those associated with Tallahassee Museum for some time. This is your chosen profession, in my fair in saying so.
That, my passion.
Yeah. Where did that begin for you?
That's a hard question because I was one of those people that thought they were going to become a doctor. I was a pre-med student in the Midwest.
Interesting.
And I had an opportunity to do off-campus study in Philadelphia, and having been raised as a farm boy, the bright lights of the city attracted me and went out there on a Great Lakes College Association internship. They required that we do a job 4 days a week to learn the city. And then one day was seminars, which, by the way, my seminar was with Andrea Mitchell, who was a local newscaster in Philadelphia at the time,
wow,
who became nationally known. But they asked me what kind of internship I wanted, and it was like, I had no idea. Well, right. You want to intern in a school? And I knew I didn't want to do that. And we went through several options. They said, you know, how about a museum? And as a kid, I may have gotten to a museum once every several years. We'd go to Chicago or St. Louis to see a museum. And I loved it. So I thought, oh, that sounds interesting. And that became the journey.
Isn't that interesting?
Did my internship, went back, got my degree, thought I was going to go to IU med school, and something at that point said, that's really not what you want to do.
Click.
And I went back to Philadelphia and started my career in museums and started at the very bottom, and somehow, actually, a board member there at the Academy of Natural Sciences says, Russ, what do you want to do? And I said, I don't really know. And he says, well, I want to tell you something. When you decide what it is you want to do, you need to focus on it and make sure that's your priority and don't get distracted. And at that point, I said, you know, I might want to be a museum director. And here I sit.
Here you are today.
Yeah.
And what did that bottom look like? You see, I started at the bottom.
I actually worked within the museum's live animal unit. We did animal shows. And in the basement was where we kept all the animals. So I started out as a cage cleaner and evolved into giving animal programs and then became a teacher at the museum and worked my way up administration.
A cage cleaner.
A cage
cleaner. Yes, a euphemistic way of saying
yes
that you were responsible for what the animals left behind.
Yes.
I see.
And sometimes being a director, you kind of still do that.
Whether they're four-legged or two-legged.
That's right.
I get it.
That's right.
So boys and girls, if you are in school now and you're looking forward and thinking, you know, I want to walk into that six-figure salaried position, think about cleaning animal cages. That might be a good place to start. What did it do for you?
Well, I mean, I think personally I've always had a strong commitment believing that we're placed here on Earth to make people's lives better.
And where does that come from?
I don't know. It probably was a very strong family.
Yeah, you're belief. A Midwestern guy.
Yeah.
Midwestern values,
yeah.
Family,
yeah.
Agriculture.
You know, sort of the roots of the earth.
Yeah.
I love nature.
Yeah, yeah.
I love history.
Yeah.
I got very active during the Vietnam War era, got involved with the Farm Workers Union. Maybe I've always had a commitment to the underdog, but that's sort of evolved to realize that we all have potential in us. And how do we reach that potential? How do we follow our passions? And I've come to believe that museums really serve a critical role in doing that.
Let's talk about that. What is that role, do you think? I know that's a pretty broad question, but...
Well, I mean, obviously, we are the caretakers of our heritage, whether it's our natural heritage, our historic, our arts. We are the ones that kind of preserve the record of where we've come from.
Yeah.
And if we're doing our job right, it's not so much focusing on where we were, but what can we learn from where we were to be productive, happy, creative citizens today.
Do you think that's remarkably or distinctly an American way of life, or is that you find that in other cultures?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not an accomplished international traveler. I've spent time in Mexico. I've spent time in Canada. I know a lot of friends from international destinations. Yeah. I think one of the things we all share in common is a love of family. And if you think that families are the important tapestry of our communities, our society, our nationalities, maybe we aren't all that different.
Talking with Russell Doss. He is president and CEO of the Tallahassee Museum right here in our hometown. We're going to continue this conversation as we learn more about the museum. And you've got a number of things coming up that we want to talk about in terms of activities and events and all kinds of spentabulous things that this organization brings to us on a continuing basis. You stay with me. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. We'll be right back.
Experience, reliability, thoroughness, and professionalism. That's the Merry Maid's way of keeping your home or office at its best. And it's what we have come to expect here at Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Our studios and offices always shine because Merry Maid's makes the difference, like they do for hundreds of offices and homes in Tallahassee. They'll do just the same, just for you. And they're right here, giving back to our community and giving you extra benefits, like saving you up to $400 on your first cleaning by giving you extra service, and saving an extra 10% when you mention Tallahassee Talks. Their website makes it really easy for you, too. You can schedule a cleaning and make a payment with just a few clicks, any day, anytime, day or night, when it's convenient for you. Call Merry Maid's this week, 850-386-2205. That's 386-2205. Or find them online at merrymaids.com.
Bringing you whatever Tallahassee is talking about this week. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back and talking with Russell Dawes. Tallahassee Museum started how long ago?
Well, we're celebrating our 60th anniversary.
My goodness.
We got our start in 1957. And when you stop to think about those 60 years and what our community's done, the social issues that have occurred over those 60 years.
Remarkable.
It is pretty remarkable. And I think our founders deserve a lot of credit for what they took
on. A handful of people, from what I understand. I mean,
it really was. It was a grassroots effort. You got to remember, Tallahassee then is so different than today.
Yeah.
In some ways, it was a small, isolated town. We had the universities, so there were external inputs. Mm-hmm. We were the state capital. But the exposure our kids in the community at that point, keep in mind we may have had one or two TV stations, were fairly limited.
Yeah.
And our founders said, we need to provide a hands-on learning opportunity for the children of Tallahassee.
I get you.
To expose them to the world, the history of the world, the cultures of the world, the environments of the world, so that they can grow up with a much broader perspective of the United States and our world. And a lot of people from organizations, businesses, teachers, university people all saw the need for that, and it grew into the Tallahassee Junior Museum at that point. The state legislature at that point was building new buildings, and one of their planned buildings down near Gaines Street was destined to be a new building, and there was a house there. And they provided the Tallahassee Junior Museum with the opportunity to use that house rent-free, which we used for a couple of years. And people would bring in their worldwide traveling objects that they collected, and several rooms were set up with exhibits and vignettes of different cultures and countries. And it got a growing following. It was a great place for kids to learn about places, but quickly was outgrown. Plus, the state was saying, you know, we need to build our building.
Kinda, yeah.
So they searched for a property that would be appropriate for what they wanted to be. And that
is
our
site today.
Which
is now the property that you occupy.
That's right. They found, I think it started out somewhere around 10 acres at our current site near Lake Bradford. And that's now grown into over 52 acres.
It's remarkable what you all have done in even in the recent years, where you've added exhibits and, of course, the live animal exhibits, and this zip line adventure is a great thing.
Dinosaurs.
Yeah, the dinosaurs. I mean, the 60 years ago, now those folks who started then, I would imagine, are any of them still with us?
Some are. Obviously, you know, they're aging.
60 years ago.
Many of them still have that same love and passion for us. Education is our soul. It's our core mission. You know, we realized as we grew that trying to talk about the history of the world and its cultures and history was a mission way too broad. And as Tallahassee grew, there became other ways of expanding children and adults' horizons. So we began focusing more and more on the strength of our collections and what we could do well and what we felt was most important in that core mission of education, and have really narrowed it down to looking at just our region, looking at primarily 1800s forward, because, I mean, there are wonderful places like Mission San Luis that can talk about earlier parts of our history. So we've really defined and narrowed that focus, and things like Tallahassee Tree to Tree or Jim Gehry's 20th Century Dinosaurs are very still core to our mission, because Tree to Tree adventures, and this, we'll talk about relevancy later, but that really hits right on our nature focus, our environmental focus. It provides people with a whole new perspective of how to see nature. We believe that kids and even adults are not getting enough time outdoors like they used to. And we know from lots of research that there are side effects to not getting kids and adults outdoors. So what a wonderful way to get them outdoors. It's very active. It's great exercise. And it's all about nature.
And I've seen it in action to see families come together. You'll see a mom and a dad and a couple of kids. And they're doing that all together. Oh, yeah. That's kind of cool.
Well, and that's another whole thing, intergenerational learning and sharing.
Right.
I mean, sometimes I've almost gotten to tears watching grandparents showing their little grandkids around. I remember specifically a grandparent showing our 1880s farmstead, telling their grandchild, "This is what I grew up in."
Isn't that remarkable?
And seeing that grandchild going, "Where's air conditioning?" You know, or no screen windows.
Where do I plug in my laptop? There is about that this interesting interplay of the natural environment, the tree-to-tree adventure, the animal exhibits, and then this preservation, you would say, I guess, of this agrarian lifestyle.
Sure. We used to be known as Middle Florida because the whole southern peninsula was swamp. So it really was what was between St. Augustine, Pensacola, and as you know, the history of the capital was formed because we were in between. But that is a big part of the cotton belt at that time. You know, cotton ruled in this area.
And for that part of what you bring to us, you've done a pretty nifty job, I think, of replicating those installations. You know, the typical general store, whatever.
And the Turpentine Commissary.
You've got a working blacksmith, a couple of smithies out there that do their thing.
That's right.
Which is a great demonstration. And once again, we didn't go over and buy this at Walmart. We had to make them.
That's right.
Out of iron.
That's right.
Yeah.
And now they're folk artists.
Exactly. Speaking of which, you've been host to a number of festivals like the Tallahassee Jazz Blues Festival here back in the spring, I guess it was.
That's right. April.
Again, I lose track of time. Del Suggs, instrumental in that, no pun intended, but has contributed sizably.
Del is a treasure.
And he's a board member, too, is he not?
He has been. He's not currently.
Okay. So, I mean, you've really brought together people and ideas that I think are percolating. They're productive.
Yeah, I mean, one of our visions for the museum is to be a place the community gathers and celebrates our heritage. Mm. You were talking earlier, an important part of our interpretive plan is a concept of identity. Yeah. I mean, the inner relationship to our natural environment and our history can't be separated.
Right.
I mean, as you mentioned, plantations, that was an early part of the region's economic development.
Yeah.
And it couldn't have been what it was without the people,
yeah,
the natural environment, our longleaf pine forests that spanned the whole Southeast were another economic engine.
Gave rise to the turpentine industry.
Ship masts.
All of that.
The live oak was critical in wooden ships. So, I mean, that's where our economic engine got started.
Mm-hmm.
But it also shapes the identity we have today. I mean,
remarkable.
Another concept is migration. The people who were here, the indigenous people,
mm-hmm,
the people who have come and gone, whether it's the Spanish, the French, the English, have all shaped the people we are today.
Right, right. It's called the Tallahassee Museum, and it is one of those treasures that so many of us have enjoyed for many years, and it sounds like they're in good shape out there. We need to continue to support their efforts as we talk with the president and CEO, Mr. Russell Dawes. Stay with me. We've got a little bit more, and we'll be right back.
When you place a document in someone's hand, it should reach more than their head. It needs to reach their heart with compelling visuals and dramatic presentations right down to the paper it's printed on. Rapid Press reaches the hearts of thousands of people every day with commercial printing and mailing services for organizations that feed and house children, for businesses that bring vital products and services to our community, and for theaters, festivals, and orchestras reaching bigger audiences and bringing joy to life. Rapid Press commercial printers since 1983.
For digital printing, offset printing, finishing, and mailing services, reach for Rapid Press. When you're ready to share your vision, excite your customers, and reach the hearts of your audience, reach for Rapid Press. You'll find them online at rapidpress.com or call 893-7346. 893-7346. Rapid Press, the power of print.
Hi, I'm Jerry.
And I'm Pete.
And we're with the Jerry Thigpen Trio, and you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
So here we are talking about Tallahassee Museum, Russell Dawes, the guy who stands in. It's remarkable to me too, Russell, that as we think of, and you touched on this, our own history, and you are a curator of the history that is ours for Tallahassee, for Leon County, that agrarian base that included slavery.
That's
and
right.
There are portions of Tallahassee Museum, there are areas of the museum that bring to us a demonstration of what life was like then. Even particularly the house that was owned by Catherine
Marat. Bellevue.
In our time.
That's right.
This current conversation we've had in the last number of months about whether, in fact, those sorts of recognitions, we'll call them, whether it's a statue or a flag, has that impacted the way people feel about what you've done, do you think?
I don't know that it has. It hasn't come to us directly in that regard. I would hope it has created thought. I think you hit it right solidly. Museums can have labels to tell stories. They can have programs where staff tell stories. And we can shape and guide that. But I think a real important part of museums are the things that happen that we don't expect to happen because we're a stage. You might see something. Maybe it's Catherine Marat's dress that we haven't even tried to tell you about, but it lights a light bulb for you. And I think that's where museums really can do things others can't. It's you just don't know what you're going to relate to mm-hmm. and how that's going to change your life or change your perspectives. And I think that's, you know, history is something that needs to be preserved. Mm-hmm. It needs to be properly interpreted. Mm-hmm. But it's also something we need to learn from mm-hmm. so we don't make mistakes mm-hmm. that we made in the past. Mm-hmm. And I think if we do our job as a gathering place for the community mm-hmm. where different people of different backgrounds and perceptions come together mm. in a safe, non-threatening way. They can share and learn from each other mm-hmm. so that we're a facilitator.
A facilitator of a greater understanding than
that's
perhaps,
right.
Huh?
I mean, yeah. Right now, better more than ever, we've really got to come together as a people
yeah.
And respect each other and try to understand how our individual identities were shaped.
Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting that one could take what you're doing as a tribute to that lifestyle, particularly the period that you've identified. I mean, the 1800s in the South, but then again, even in the early 1900s, when you have Gadsden County being the most prolific grower of wrapper leaf tobacco.
That's right.
And an entire population of people depending on that industry that then mid-60s, I guess, or early 60s collapsed.
Yeah.
Those are realities.
Yeah.
And that population found themselves disenfranchised, not unlike, you know, 100 years earlier following the Civil War. And for you, I would think it's got to be a bit bittersweet. You know, you're chronicling the for us the realities of history, without trying to editorialize, not trying to evaluate it, just simply saying, folks, this is who we come
yeah,
from.
That's right.
Yeah.
And the more voices we bring in, the better a job we can do. It's trying to really interpret that tapestry of diversity, and when I mean diversity, so many different peoples of different backgrounds.
Yeah, yeah.
And as our community and region changes, we've got to weave in new voices.
Yeah.
I mean, we've really got to do a better job of reflecting the migration of the Hispanic cultures.
Yeah.
You mentioned Gadsden County. How can we do a better job relating to their role in our identity? Wow.
So that's where history becomes contemporary.
That's right.
In that sort of crossroads. When you think of the coming months, weeks and months ahead, you've got a number of exhibits. And you mentioned this idea of Catherine Marant's dress.
Yes.
And you've got an exhibit coming that's going to feature dresses?
I know actually what we have is an exhibit looking at our 60 years of collecting as a museum.
Okay.
And some of our finest artifacts. And I probably should say for the audience, when we have an artifact, it is important to be preserved, but more importantly is what are the stories those artifacts can tell. So in that, we're using our artifacts to tell different stories about the history of our region and why we collect. And part of that was Catherine Marant's dress
that's
been in our collections for decades, but not seen because it was in very bad condition. And a wonderful story about that dress was passed on to one of Catherine Marant's slaves. And that family maintained that dress until it came to us.
Isn't that
so? There's a wonderful story there that indeed needs to be told and is being told. But through grants from the Daughters of American Revolution, which Catherine Marant was very involved in, she was the great-grandniece of George Washington, the father of our country.
Wow.
We were able to restore the dress, and with our 60th anniversary and the support of the Daughters of the American Revolution, it is now on display, and it is just amazing. I mean, like you were saying before, some people are just amazed at the size of the dress, the colors of the dress, the seamstress work on the dress.
Wow.
Where did the fabric come from?
And when does this all happen? Is it happening?
It's on display.
It's on now.
Yeah.
Okay. So, folks, you've been advised. This is your opportunity. Go to the Tallahassee Museum. In fact, they have memberships. You can buy, is it an annual or?
We have a number of categories. Family and friends is our largest, and that gets you unlimited museum admission for a whole year, up to four people with you on a visit.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
What a treasure, and what a great conversation. Russell Dawes, our good friend, and the person who, along with a very able staff, I have to say, those that I have met have been as equally dedicated, I think, in this task. We're fortunate. The Tallahassee Museum there for us day in and day out. Go see some otters and the blacksmith, and by all means, be sure to check out Catherine Murat's dress. And if you do see Russell Dawes around, he'll probably be cleaning animal cages or something. Be sure to shake his hand and thank him, as we will thank you, sir, for being a part of this show today.
Thank you, Brian. Really appreciate being
here. A pleasure. A pleasure. Folks, that's what I have for you today. We are the production of Alcom Media and Entertainment right here in Tallahassee, coming to you from the studios of Moose Magnificat Radio. I'll be looking for you again next week. Carl Cerny is our executive producer, and we are fortunate we have the magnitude of his talents helping us bring all this together just for you. So come on, Tallahassee, come talk to me.
So if you come to me and you say, I want to buy a house, the first thing I do is meet with you and say, okay, let's talk about this process. What can you afford? And not just purchase price, your lifestyle. What kind of lifestyle do you want to have here?
Tiffany Hamilton, broker of Eck and Hamilton Realty, talking about the real estate market in Tallahassee.
Right now, for any investor, in my opinion, affordable housing is something that we should be looking at. That means a purchase price of about $185 to $250, a rental income of about $1,000 to $1,500 max.
Realtor, broker, consultant Tiffany Hamilton is helping home buyers, investors, and other realtors achieve their individual goals.
Hi, I'm Tiffany Hamilton. Investing in real estate or buying a home has never been more challenging. Even finding solid information you can trust can also be a challenge. That's exactly why I began my career as a realtor nearly 15 years ago, to help buyers and sellers overcome those challenges. As a broker, as a realtor, or a consultant, if I can help you achieve your goals, it would be my pleasure.
Call 850-366-8433 or online at TiffanyHamilton.com.